Welcome to Modern Practice. I'm Dr. Tom Villanueva, practicing physician and associate vice president of clinical resources at Vizient. On this episode, we feature part two of our discussion about strategies we could use to deal with vaccine hesitancy among hospital staff. Joining me on that discussion is Dr. Michelle Andersack at the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center and Dr. Tony Reed, Chief Medical Officer at Temple Health. Let's hear what they had to say.
Tony, can you tell us a little about your journey, if you will, over at Temple and some of the mitigating factors or insights that you may have had in reference to hesitancy?
Yeah, and I'll just start with the kind of the basics. For those who don't know Temple University Health System and the Temple University Hospital, we are in North Philadelphia. We're a public not-for-profit hospital sitting right in the heart of the urban underserved community. We have an academic medical center that is at the health science campus, a community hospital, behavioral health hospital, and then a comprehensive cancer center that are all part of the health system. And we have our population health arm and our clinically integrated network of the private practices and federally qualified health systems and such that help serve the Northern Philadelphia community. We are the major teaching site for the Lewis Katz School of Medicine at Temple University. So that's a little bit about us. One of the things to note, we were one of the research sites for the J&J Janssen vaccine. And so we started the process early as we became involved in that. But when we began planning what to do when it came to vaccinating our staff, we made a decision from the start that we were not going to make it mandatory at the outset. There was too much conversation, too much talk, too much risk and other stuff happening in the community that just to come out with that kind of a MO wouldn't have worked. And so it left the door open to have the conversation. It also left the door open that if we found that we needed to, we could shift on the fly. But we recognized that conversation was what was necessary. In that recognition, we began a partnership with our School of Risk Communication down at the university and researchers that really focus on how to have these kind of healthcare conversations and how to address issues of trust and hesitancy, if that's the right word for it, and other factors around how healthcare is delivered. They partnered with our College of Urban Bioethics and our Center for Urban Bioethics, and we began researching right inside of our own walls, created focus groups to really learn those foundational factors among all of our employees, and then created a survey out of that to see how much each factor weighed into that so that we could then develop the strategy. What we learned is trust to uncertainty, to lack of knowledge about messenger RNA, minimal data available, the political climate. And what we also found was that no one felt that it was unnecessary or that vaccines were not part of the solution or that they were bad. So there were none of the traditional anti-vaxxers, if you will, that we found in that collection. And so that gave us some hope and some positive conversation around where we could go with this. We also found out that there was nobody in our group that at least openly said that COVID was a farce and that it didn't exist. So that was a little comforting as well, that we all believed we were in the middle of a pandemic. From there, we built the strategy. And rather than sorting by groups or categories or employments, we looked at it and said, let's start in those who are most impacted, those who are working in our COVID units, particularly the ICUs, working in our emergency departments, those working in our med-surg units where we had our COVID patients, those in the behavioral health units who had no choice but to be exposed because we couldn't necessarily delay labor and delivery, prenatal care, that kind of stuff. Those are the units that we started with on day one. And we brought everybody in as a group: physicians, nurses, pharmacists, respiratory therapists, physical therapists, environmental services, transport, food delivery, nutrition. Everyone came together, got invited together, and it became a community collective. And those who have been watching our story and the cohesiveness that's created in these units that we formed understand that these are the people who they've been effectively living and working with for much of the 9 months that led into this. And so it created that pseudo family unit that was able to travel together and be vaccinated together. Our differences, where our physicians and nurses come from versus some of our other staff, our physicians are largely a commuter population, whereas more of our frontline staff are from the community. And so we realized that we'd had those differentials happen as well. We also realized that some of our physicians who look like me were not necessarily the best credible messengers for the community that we served or for our employee population, which mirrored the community. And so we found willing participants in all of our disciplines, a handful of physicians, primary care physicians, emergency medicine physicians, researchers. We found nurses who were interested in being part of the solution and helping to deliver the message. Even folks from environmental services, the transport team, and others raised their hand and said, listen, what can we do to help deliver the message of the value, the importance, and the safety of this? And so we engaged them from the start. They became our credible messengers. They were coalesced and aligned through our employee health services, and they used the data that came out of our research to drive the message deeper into our populations. They became members of what's known as our COVID response team, which is the group that's dedicated to serving our own healthcare providers and our own healthcare workforce. So it started as employee health and blossomed to more people that needed to be included in that because of that mass effort to help keep us safe as we were working to treat the community. And our primary focus when it came to how we would get word out was media. And just to understand that, Pew Research Foundation did a survey, I think it came out 2 or 3 months ago, 86% of people these days get their news online. For 52% of them, it's the preferred method. Now, fortunately, predominantly, they're still using the news websites, but the other half is using media as their primary vehicle for news. And so that's one of the things that we hung to. And I was asked that question by one of our patient family advisory council members last night of why not being on the news every night with a different person talking about the value of vaccination. And my answer was, that's a great idea. And it involves partnership with ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, all the others. And it's something that they're working on as a community collective, but they're not necessarily the place where people are turning for instant news. And so we knew that going in. And so purposefully design the face of the vaccinated or the staff. You will not find me on any of our materials. You won't find me in any of our education sessions. And I'll preface that by saying I am a family physician. It is part of what I do. Right. I'm purposefully out of that conversation and context so that it's our staff talking. It's not coming from on high. It's not from leadership. It's not from administration. It is a word of mouth that's encouraged within our ranks. I also spent a lot of time explaining to the other senior leaders in our organization that mandatory out of the gate is a bad idea, that a goal of 90% out of the gate is a terrible idea, and that maybe we set a realistic goal in the first month, let's get 50% of our people vaccinated. Let's get 65%, and I use air quotes to say willingly, and then let's set a total goal of 75%. Not because we only wanted 75%, because we needed to make this realistic and we needed to make this a staged iterative thing. It's the basic principles of goal setting. It's got to be achievable. It's got to be concrete. It's got to be something you can work for. What we also did in setting those goals and letting people know that that's where it is, we took away the semblance of the heavy hand and the force and that we're in it to win it and we're going to get everybody vaccinated come heck or high water. I want that to be the persona going out. Also allowed people to choose, am I going to be an early adopter? Am I going to be in that majority? Am I going to be a late adopter? The pivotal moment on that was when we were having our opening vaccination day on December 16th, the Washington Post came to do their story from our place. And it was all about the rollout. And I ended up in one of their videos standing at our whiteboard with the curve, the adoption curve, explaining that strategy for the Washington Post, which I heard a lot about from around the country and the difference between that, let's get it all right here, right now, and why wouldn't somebody want to be vaccinated versus let's let people come in at their own pace because we know that healthcare workers have been through this and we know that those who have been most affected are going to come to the table. What we then did to make sure that we kept everybody informed and engaged, senior leadership gets the data weekly on where we are in vaccination numbers. Managers get the general percent by their unit. And managers have been trained not to push their employees to get vaccinated, but to ensure that everybody feels invited and included. If they find that somebody hasn't been vaccinated because they haven't had the time, their obligation is to find cross coverage for that person so that they can go get vaccinated. If somebody has questions about vaccinations, their obligation is to make sure that they're connected with the credible messengers. It's not that their obligation is to get vaccination, which is what often happens in the flu shot. Is make sure you facilitate whatever they need to make it happen. And if they're not ready to talk, okay, that's okay. And so we empowered the managers to do that kind of work rather than get your numbers up. A very different message there.
Yeah, I like what I'm hearing. So basically listening to individuals or listening to these populations, making sure they know that they're being heard and then using them as those change agents. That way they represent their own populations, if you will, or their own subsets. It makes sense.
So set up a buddy program. When we got to the department by department, occupational health or the credible messengers coming through, if after the conversation, somebody said, you know what, I want to get vaccinated, they all went together to get vaccinated. We made it open access to the vaccination center. We had a handful of doses even during the shortages that we reserved for that kind of activity. And today it's a walk-in clinic. And so we made it as easy access as we could. And most of those principles we've then translated into our community activity. And so it is a walk-in clinic for the community. It's open access. You can call ahead if you want. You can just show up if you want. It's all done for free. But that's where we set it up so that we could do it. Now, our numbers, as of the end of last week, we were at 76%. And only about halfway through the department by department walking through. I've got some units that are at 92, 93, 94%. Our cancer center is almost universally there. My lowest is at 60%. And when we dove into that to figure out what was happening, it's where we use the most per diems. And so we don't record if somebody has gotten their vaccine somewhere else. I don't necessarily have record of it. And so we know that that number is really higher because they're telling us that. And so that's our next step, is to begin to record that in the eventuality that this becomes a recurring annual vaccine and it gets dumped together with the flu shot.
Tony, so many best practices. Michelle, you both brought up in reference to messaging. And what I've heard from some of our other membership is that just tossing statistics isn't going to work among those who are hesitant. It's the storytelling. And I think you have some great feedback to provide in reference to what stories to tell or how to even tell the stories, Michelle. Can you share with that with some of us?
Yeah, well, one of the things that we found to be super effective is having people who have taken the journey, who had sort of a lack of vaccine confidence, sort of tell their story of how they arrived at getting vaccinated. Another strategy that we have really used is partnering with community groups. We have several vaccination sites at Black churches, at community centers, Asian Pacific Islander community centers, at Latinx organizations, where individuals can go and receive vaccines from people who look like them and get information from trusted voices in their community and hear what the process has been on the ground level. And that has really been incredibly successful in increasing vaccine equity here in Seattle. And I know that that strategy is being used in other places around the country, and it has been really effective. I think the other thing that is really critical is I think we tend to jump to judging people for their decisions without really sitting down and listening and trying to understand why they're making the decisions that they're making. And I've spoken to several members in my family who are on the more conservative side of things and really just trying to understand why they are where they are currently. I think there's a lot of feelings of people wagging their hands at them and like, oh, you think I'm ignorant or uninformed, and I'm tired of you people judging me when I have very valid reasons for not wanting to get it. So I think listening to those reasons, trying to understand where people are coming from, and responding with information and responding in a way that validates their feelings and concerns and also provides information about why vaccines are important for the health of all of us and why maximum vaccine coverage is going to get us closer to health and well-being as a nation, as a world, I think is really critical. But you can't do that unless you really sit down and listen to people and try to understand without judging where they're coming from. And particularly when someone in the chat raised a question of how can we trust a system that is systemically racist? And is it an either or are you saying that because we have systemic racism, then we can't trust these vaccines which come from these systems? And I think that yes, we are dealing with systemic racism. And there have been people in the vaccine process, many of them BIPOC individuals, who have ensured that BIPOC individuals are included in the trials, not only to ensure that we get a vaccine that works for all of us, but also to increase acceptability and uptake when a vaccine finally became available. And I think it's really critical to note that the VRBPAC committee that sits and reviews the FDA or the data from the sponsors presented to the FDA to make the emergency use authorization decisions, one of the members on on that committee is Dr. James Hildreth, who is the dean and president of Meharry Medical College, one of the historically Black medical colleges, an infectious disease doctor who is well regarded and renowned. And I think we have people at the table who are making decisions and who are ensuring that we have products that work for all of us, even within a system that really needs to be improved. It is certainly far from perfect. And we have safeguards and people making decisions that are ensuring that the vaccines are safe and effective for all of us.
That's the end of this episode. Next week, I'll resume my interview with Drs. Michelle Andrusak and Tony Reed. Please join us for other Modern Practice podcasts on the Vizient Medical Leadership Channel. Subscribe today, like us, or send us your comments. Also, please listen and subscribe to SG2 Perspectives, the podcast on the latest in healthcare strategies. I'm Dr. Tom Villanueva. Thanks for listening.